With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Have a good time. Enjoy life. It's life is too short to get bogged down and be discouraged or... you have to keep moving. You have to keep going. Put one foot in front of the other, smile, and just keep on rolling.
Kobe Bryant, words to live by from Kobe Bryant, who passed away yesterday at the age of 41. Helicopter crash, 8 other people on board, including his daughter, Gianna, 13 years old, including John Altobelli, who's a former University of Houston baseball player, who was a coach in the Southern California area, whose daughter played with Gianna on her basketball team. They were on their way to the Mamba Academy to play some basketball, and then the worst happened yesterday. So we are remembering Kobe Bryant today. We're allowing you guys to get in 713-572-4610.
One of our listeners said this, and this is one of these things where I think the fact that he was with his daughter, that John Altobelli and was with his daughter. There was another. There was one other family unit. There were nine people died.
Nine people on board. Yeah.
You know, and this one got me. And this is what I was thinking last night because I was flying myself, which is those last few minutes before the crash, being with your daughter in that moment. Because I think because I fly a lot, and every now and then you get turbulence, and as much as I fly, I still get freaked out by bad turbulence. Mm-hmm. And usually in that moment, I think if I have any thoughts at all, my thought is like, okay, I got everything taken care of. I got my life insurance. I got my will. All that. I'm good to go. It's obviously a whole different deal when you're there with your daughter that you want to protect more than anything in the world, and you're helpless in that moment.
Yeah, I thought about that a lot yesterday. Quite honestly, what that must have been like. So, just sad, man. It's just sad. 713-572-4610. If you want to get in, I mentioned in the previous segment. I'm trying to think. Is this the most shocking? The most shocking thing or death that I've experienced as a sports fan, and I can't think of a bigger figure in sports that's passed away unexpectedly in my sports watching lifetime. Like when I say unexpectedly, I mean like at an age where there's no, at an age, at a level of health, at a place in life where there's no way we should be hearing about Kobe Bryant dying today.
Well, and that's where, and obviously, and that's why usually it ends up being a plane accident, doesn't it? It's
right.
Thurman Munson.
Yeah,
you know, Payne Stewart.
Yep.
This is
an accident. It's usually an accident when this happens.
I guess the one thing that people are bringing up a lot, and I think younger people might not realize or understand what this was like at the time, but when Magic Johnson announced that he had HIV,
yes,
that was at a time when having the HIV meant you were going to get AIDS and you were going to die.
Yes.
It was a death sentence. You know, Magic was right at the beginning of when they started being able to treat HIV to where they are right now. So it's obviously it's still traumatic news if you get that. But at that time, it felt like, one of the greatest basketball players who ever lived and is still playing and is one of the great superstars of the sport just received a death sentence.
Yeah, he had to retire that day. He retired, and you thought he's retiring because he's gonna get sick and he's gonna die.
Yeah,
that's what you thought that day. It was in November of 1991. I think for those who remember living that, I think it is comparable. I know Magic is still with us, but in terms of the shock that you felt when you heard that news. I do think it's comparable. I was in a baseball stadium. I thought about this yesterday when I saw Matt Thomas, who does radio play-by-play for the Rockets on the road, tweeted yesterday. He was obviously in Denver with the Rockets for that game, and he said, man, it is surreal being in an NBA arena with the news matriculating around the arena. And certainly it's different now than it was back in 1979 when I tell you my experience that was similar to this, because you have phones. The news spreads virally like wildfire through an arena. Back in 1979, I was at Shea Stadium. The Mets were playing the Phillies, actually, in a doubleheader that day. I was 10, maybe, 1979. So, yeah, I was 10. And the news came out in a baseball stadium that Thurman Munson died in a plane crash that afternoon. And it was just, I just remember that stadium being full of people like, man, I feel weird watching a baseball game right now knowing this news is going on in the background.
You know,
in New York, by the way.
The other two, you know, and obviously, Steve McNair and Sean Taylor are two football players, you know, and obviously Steve McNair with a local connection. But Sean Taylor had a special certain kind of respect amongst young defensive backs, especially to where he was almost worshipped. I mean, yesterday before all of this happened, remember, they every year around the Pro Bowl, they start showing highlights of Sean Taylor at the Pro Bowl.
Wiping out that punter?
Sean Merriman. So Sean Taylor he had no chill about him when it came to playing at the Pro Bowl. He wasn't going to slow down at all. But that Sean Taylor, out of the blue.
Guys wear his number still.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Steve McNair, out of nowhere. You know, Dale Earnhardt, a lot of people are bringing up Dale Earnhardt. And Dale Earnhardt is, I'm not trying to power rank these things.
It feels
very tasteless to do that. But I think it's a matter of just kind of putting everything in perspective. When you sit here and you start to kind of to sit back and reflect on it, all these different athletes met different people at different for different reasons.
Sure.
You know, and I think I can remember when, because I grew up a Bills fan. I can remember when the first time I saw Jim Kelly speak, and you could see that his mouth cancer had affected his speech. And I didn't anticipate having the reaction that I did. You know, it was somebody that meant so much to me when I was a young child or as a teenager to all of a sudden be confronted with what's happening to him. I think it's in that moment you realize, for whatever reason, like, I don't know why the hell we watch sports. It's some deep inborn human biological drive that we like watching other people compete in sports. Yeah. And we get emotionally attached to these athletes. And sometimes you wonder just how seriously you should take it. I can't put a finger on it or why, but we form deep emotional attachments to these athletes, you know? And it's above and beyond just wanting your team to win or just wanting the glory of a championship or something. In those moments where you realize that they are mortal and they are human, it affects you. And that's what I kept hearing from people, you know, including people in this business, who after a while you get kind of grizzled about things. What I heard from several different people yesterday was, I'm kind of taken aback by how this is affecting me.
Yeah, you know, I'm one of those people.
People that talk a lot. Left without words.
Yeah.
Because you're just, not that you ever expect this specifically to happen, but if I were to imagine it happening, I didn't think it would have affected me like it did.
Yeah.
And it just, it's a part of you. It's these people, these Kobe Bryants, they become a part of your life.
Yep.
And it's hard to lose them.
713-572-4610. Let's get you guys in on the conversation. Let's go to Anthony. Anthony, you're up on Payne and Pendergast.
Hey guys, I was just sitting there thinking, it's a sad day for all, you know, and unfortunately 2020 going forward will be forever ingrained in my mind this year. Until the day I die, I'll always be able to reference this year thinking of this sad moment. I was doing some reading this morning and just trying to find out more about the incident. I know it's early, but there haven't been any tweets or anything from the parents, and I was reading and it seems that Kobe had a very turbulent relationship with his mom and dad. And I was just wondering if any of you guys knew about that and if maybe he was able to reconcile that before this tragedy took place.
Remember he had a dispute with his mother about some memorabilia.
Okay. I didn't know. I can't speak to it. I don't have it. I would be speaking out of turn, Anthony, if I said I knew what the status of his relationship was with his parents.
When he retired.
If they're still estranged, it just adds another layer of sadness to the day yesterday, for sure.
Yeah, it does. I noticed, I remember when he retired, he did write a letter to himself, and he even referenced a few things in that letter about one of the things he referenced was not, you know, allowing your parents, it was a letter to his younger self, mm-hmm. not allowing your parents to be your managers and different things. So it just kind of, you know, painted that light of, you know, it was some turbulence.
Well, you know what?
In that relationship.
And I think it was over, she had wanted to auction off a bunch of items.
Okay.
And at the time, he had said that he hadn't given it to her. And that was back in like 2013 or so, 2012, 2013. I've seen other reports that they didn't necessarily have the rosiest of relationships at this point. I guess that's and that kind of speaks to. I mean, you can't live every day as if each day is your last, but there's some things, there's times where sometimes you think about your relationship with your parents or other people close to you, if you can get them right somehow, and I think a lot of times it's a matter of just forgiving people for things. It's a lot easier to forgive than you think it is sometimes. Yeah. Once you just got to do it.
Well put.
So I assume the sportsman.
You brought up
maybe
the sportsman. You brought up how you guys postponed games that week.
Right.
9/11.
Making a comparison. I was talking about different situations where games had been postponed, or that they had been people had suggested it. So when you talk about when games are postponed, there's the assassination of JFK. Baseball did not cease games at that moment, right? Isn't that the way it went?
Whichever sport was in season canceled games.
I don't think they did cancel the games.
Oh, okay, that's right. They didn't. They kept playing.
And that was a level of criticism. So there was discussion yesterday about whether the NBA should have canceled games or not. I'm always amazed at how quick people can come out with the hot takes after stuff like this. I have no opinion about it. And frankly, I have extreme sympathy for the decision makers that have to try to make decisions in these relatively unprecedented situations where you've already got players dressed and ready to play. And in a lot of ways, is that the best thing to do in that moment? I don't know. I don't know if there's a right thing to do in those situations. So they played in a lot with heavy hearts, a lot of them, and especially guys like Austin Rivers who've been around basketball their whole lives.
713-572-4610. Let's start with, you mentioned Austin Rivers, Seth. Jonesy, let's start with Doc actually here. Here is Doc Rivers, the coach of the Clippers, of course, coach of the Celtics at one point. His Celtics teams went toe to toe with Kobe a couple of times about a decade ago. Doc has spent a lot of time around Kobe Bryant. Here's Doc Rivers' reaction to the news.
I don't know. I just don't have a lot to say. The news is just devastating to everybody who knew him, known him a long time. And, he means a lot to me, obviously. He was such a great opponent, it's what you want in sports. He had that DNA that very few athletes can ever have, the Tiger Woods and the Michael Jordans, It's funny. I was getting to know him more since he retired. This is a tough one. We have to go play. The news is just so devastating for Vanessa and his family, and there's just so many people he touched.
That's Doc Rivers reacting to the news. I think reflecting a lot of the reaction around the league. Let's get here the reaction. Austin Rivers, I would imagine, has a special bond with Kobe Bryant from the standpoint of these guys are both second generation players whose fathers played in the league. Austin Rivers, we saw visually his reaction yesterday before the game, crying, going through warmups. Here's Austin Rivers following the Rockets game.
Such a great loss, He's one of the greatest players to ever play the game, but more importantly, just for what he's meant for the youth of basketball and sports. I got to be honest, I'm a competitor, and obviously we cared about losing tonight, but I got to be honest with you, it wasn't on my mind when we lost us losing the game. You go back to reality, and the facts are we lost somebody that meant so much to all of us. And then you hear about his daughter. As a father, I've said many prayers for that family, and I'm going to continue to do so.
Austin Rivers following the game yesterday. It was palpable just watching that game on TV, Seth. There was no air in that building yesterday in Denver. Like, it was just, it was the building was very, very stale.
My brother's actually at that game, and
he was there yesterday.
Yeah, and I haven't talked to him about it yet. He had to leave immediately after. So, that's basically what he had said. He texted me a couple times
during the game.
Yeah.
Wow.
I showed the tribute, which I wonder if the just on very short notice like this, when Kobe retired, there were a lot of tribute videos kind of done for him. And it wasn't too long ago. So I think if you think as a Rockets fan about the various times that Kobe either crushed us and or those times where you prevailed against Kobe, probably some of your more emotional moments as a Rockets fan have come either in triumph over Kobe or at the defeat of Kobe Bryant, at his hands.
You touched on this earlier. I think one of the things that I learned yesterday, and I've learned that throughout just growing up too. I was somebody who rooted against the Miami Hurricanes back in the day. When they made those 30 for 30s about the U, I was like, this is awesome. Because you're learning about your foe. You're learning about the team that you rooted against all the time, and you realize how important they were to your sports fandom, that you needed for the teams you rooted for, you needed an opponent that was equal to or better than them for you to get as emotionally charged as you could. Kobe was somebody who emotionally charged me as a fan, as a player, and then he's somebody who in retirement I just grew to gain great respect for.
My grandmother-in-law, who was a huge basketball fan, used to sit and watch NBA every night. She was not a, as she called him, not as an insult, but just because she thought his name was Toby Bryant. That I do not like that Toby Bryant. Because he was that kind of a player.
Yes.
He was so, there's something about somebody that is so clearly trying to crush your soul.
Yeah. Clearly and outwardly.
It's amazing just like how intense he was all the time. And I remember the first time I saw him play at Toyota Center. I feel like basketball more than any other sport, when you see guys in person, especially the great ones in person, you have that first reaction of, oh, I get it. that is one. My biggest impression of Kobe that kind of took me by surprise was just how damn strong he was.
Yes.
It looked like he was carrying people on his back to the basket, as a Rockets fan, you got to sit and think, I got to watch this guy play a lot of basketball.
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
713-572-4610. Pavetex, he's on the infamous line three. There we go. Pavetex, you're up.
Hey, good morning, guys. I just want to tell y'all I appreciate y'all, taking y'all time to cover this and everything. But I seen you yesterday, Sean. We've seen each other. I cannot sit here and tell you that I even have felt this way about anything in sports. This is one of the worst days of my sports fandom, and I think a lot of people are going through it. Seth, you hit it right on the head. Everybody's talking about it. You can't get around the fact that, especially if you have kids and a daughter, of how helpless you could feel in that situation, especially when we're supposed to be the protectors and the strong guys, I've never seen anything like this, man. And at work today, it's like people just walking around like we lost somebody, close to us. So, yeah, it's crazy. We go crazy about being a fan, and you hit it on the head, Seth, about, who would ask him that about having a boy, but fans would be fans, man. And this is one of those things that brings people together. We got a lot of hate in this world and everything, but something like this, just brings everybody together. And I think we can look at it like that.
We appreciate the call, Pavetex. Thank you.
It was strange flying yesterday, because in an airport, it's who knows who's a sports fan and who is not. But even in on a busy Sunday in Atlanta, it felt weird. I say a busy Sunday in Atlanta. The Atlanta airport's always busy.
Sure.
And it was even there where I don't know what percentage of people in there, are big sports fans or cared about Kobe Bryant, but it was eerily quiet even in an airport.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not misrepresenting, it's not like everybody was in mourning or anything, but you kind of give people looks And it's not like I'm going to go up to some stranger and be like, Kobe, huh? You know, but you'd feel like you were, I'd make eye contact with people and I felt like there are a whole bunch of people who were having the same thoughts, kind of to absorb this and digest it and figure it out. And then you get on the plane and I'd hear people, you know, you hear Kobe highlights, you know, in the seat behind me, they were listening to a Kobe highlight. I could see the guy up the kitty corner from me was watching something on his phone. It was really just a strange moment for some strange, awful news.
Payne and Pendergast with you, Sports Radio 610, on the Monday following the passing of Kobe Bryant yesterday at the age of 41. We are taking your phone calls today, 713-572-4610. Seth, I'm looking at a piece on the Daily Mail, which these are articles that are, you know, that get you, because until about 4 or 5 hours after the crash, we didn't know anybody else who was on the helicopter. Hell, they had the number of people wrong for a while yesterday. They said it was 5. It wound up being 9 mm-hmm. who were on that helicopter. And we learned that John Altobelli, who is a head baseball coach at Orange Coast College, who played baseball at the University of Houston, along with his wife, Carrie, and daughter, Alyssa, were on the plane, on the helicopter, along with, obviously, Kobe Bryant and Gigi Bryant, his daughter, 13 years old. I'm looking at a piece, though, that has pictures of all these people, you know, playing basketball, you know, the pictures with their spouses. Christina Mauser worked at the Mamba Academy. She was a girls basketball coach at a private elementary school. She was on the helicopter with her daughter, Peyton. And then the pilot's name is Ara Zobayan. There's a picture of him here, man. When you see the faces of the people on here, it's pretty chilling, man. Pretty chilling. Pretty sad.
Yeah, and that's really aside from whatever your connection to him was as a basketball player, I think that's clearly the thing that we're hearing resoundingly from a lot of people is there's just something about those people being with their daughters in that moment that really brings it home, and it makes it hard not to think about and put yourself in that same situation, and it really just an awful, awful tragic thing.
Yep. Maurice Taylor's going to join us at the top of the hour, former Rocket, former Clipper. We'll get his thoughts on Kobe Bryant. Let's go back in time to 1996, and as we relive parts of Kobe Bryant's career today on the show, this is what it sounded like the night that Kobe Bryant was drafted 13th overall by the Charlotte Hornets, mind you. He was drafted by the Hornets for the Lakers, as it turned out. The Lakers had talked to the Hornets before the draft that if Kobe Bryant were there at 13, they had a deal arranged to get Kobe Bryant that eventually came to fruition. Here's what it sounded like with Kobe Bryant being drafted. Here's what Hubie Brown was saying about Kobe Bryant the night that he was taken.
With the 13th pick in the 1996 NBA draft, the Charlotte Hornets select Kobe Bryant from Lower Merion High School in Pennsylvania.
And when you look at him, you're talking about a young man with range. He can go off the dribble. He can get his shot. And in every place that he worked out, nothing but raves. No one talking about any shortness or a weakness in his game.
Yeah, you get the package. And I think what you like best about him, everyone says that he makes everyone else around him a better player. And he's a winning style guy. We realize that there's a lot to overcome when you come right out of high school. But if anyone has a good chance, this young man is blessed with outstanding offensive skills.
That's what they were saying the night that Kobe Bryant was drafted. That was Hubie Brown on the broadcast. That was back when TNT used to carry the draft. Ernie Johnson was doing the draft that night in 1996. Hubie Brown was one of the folks who they got reaction from yesterday. Here is Hubie Brown's reaction to yesterday's tragic news.
Well, today is the saddest day in my basketball career. There's no doubt about it. We're talking about a physical force as a teenager that came into this league with a passion for the game, seldom seen. He never took a backseat to anyone in work ethic. And then the fact that when you talk about name the greatest two-way players in the history of this game, he's right at the top of the list. The love that's being expressed in this building and around the world was due because he had such an incredible career.
So that was Hubie Brown, the night Kobe was drafted. Hubie Brown reacting yesterday to the news.
Yeah, and you know, and the thing that's really interesting about Kobe, and obviously 41 is just way, 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 way too young to go in this modern age. He kind of compressed into his 41 years more than most people figure out in a lifetime, obviously. Oh, yeah. On the basketball side of things. But I think even so, like, not if he had never achieved, what he did on the basketball court, just imagine him as a hyper-driven business person. To be that hyper-driven business person, but then to also kind of get perspective on life and soften in a lot of ways with the birth of his daughters and also branch out into other things, he kind of ran the whole gamut, you know, and did what I think a lot of us would hopefully kind of try to be by the time we're 60 or 70 or 80 years
yes.
old. It's really an amazing transition he made from his athletic career into his post-athletic career, which is a hard transition to make. And a lot of guys think they're ready for it, and they're not. I think Kobe attacked it in the same way that he attacked his basketball career. Kobe understood, okay, a lot of guys think they're ready for post-retirement, but they're actually not. I'm going to have a plan. I'm going to go interview people about it. I'm going to talk to Warren Buffett about it. I'm going to talk to filmmakers. And he did all that and kind of took a methodical approach to just completing his maturation as a person. He's a different guy than he was 20 years ago. He was a different guy than he was 20 years ago. And it's really, really impressive. Just an impressive life.
Yeah. Seth, the draft night audio that we heard, obviously I watched the video of it as we pulled that. And it's striking just to, I'm not breaking any news here, Kobe Bryant idolized Michael Jordan. It's striking to watch him play in high school as a kid who was 17 years old at the time. He came into the league as a 17-year-old. He was 17 at the time. And to watch just how much he tried to emulate Michael Jordan from the form on his jump shot to the way that he dunked with his legs spread out to the way that he moved his lips when he spoke.
There's that cut everything. Up on YouTube.
Where they silhouette Kobe basically over a bunch of Michael jump shots, and they look exactly the same.
He just keeps transitioning from one to the other, and you can't tell which is which at certain points other than the jersey. I don't want to get hot takey this morning. Mark Cuban did what was a nice gesture, which was he retired the number 24 for the Mavericks. He said nobody will ever wear 24 again. I think that's an awesome sentiment. And, like, again, I don't want to get into a big sports debate about it. You made a point last night, and one of our other listeners, I heard you last night, and one of our other listeners made this point this morning, was that a lot of players are going to wear number 24 and do wear number 24 because they grow up when they're in junior high. They say, oh, I want to be Kobe Bryant. And then they're in high school, they wear their 24. I kind of feel like if there's a guy like that and he's a great player, or just not even a great player, but he wants to play for the Mavericks and he's always worn 24, I feel like the nicest thing for Kobe is to have people out there wearing that number, you know, if not with a Laker.
Yeah, to pay
homage.
I'm not
here trying to take down Mark Cuban this morning, but he's that kind of a player that so many young players in the NBA, they're not even young anymore. That's why I keep catching myself. They're not even young players anymore. Guys that are approaching retirement grew up idolizing Kobe
Early 30s.
Yeah.
Early 30s. They were, you know, teenagers through Kobe's championship, you know, through the salad years.
There are guys that are in the NBA right now who are 31 who, when Kobe was a rookie, these guys were 8 years old.
That's right.
Yeah, they were their entire adolescence. They grew up idolizing Kobe Bryant.
He was to them what guys my age, what Jordan meant to guys my age.
Right, yeah.
I was
the way
Jordan,
we feel about Jordan is the, yeah.
Yeah, it was Michael Jordan came into the league when I was a sophomore in high school. You know, Charles Barkley came into the league. Magic Johnson and Larry Bird came into the league when I was in elementary school.
Yeah.
You know, those were the guys, those were the Kobes of my generation.
And again, and that's where I guess that's the Kobe post-career. And to hear people in women's basketball talk about Kobe and what he meant to women's basketball, all these things you wouldn't necessarily have expected. The young woman from Rice that's so good, the Erica, oh, I always pronounce her name wrong, Aguamake. She actually knew Kobe and, mm-hmm. and had a personal relationship with her. All these things, I guess, if we're to compare Kobe to Michael Jordan, Kobe took this step that sometimes guys like Michael Jordan that have that kind of drive have a hard time making that step. And somehow Kobe did it. And I don't know if I can even quite put it into words. I know a lot of former athletes who have done really well financially and business and whatnot, they haven't necessarily made the transformation that Kobe did. Yeah. And it's just, it blows me away to see the way he just kept growing when he was done playing.
That's a good point about women's basketball. Can you imagine? His daughter, by all accounts, was a great basketball player as well,
yeah.
Gianna. You know, she's no longer with us at age 13. You know, what she, and in turn what Kobe, might have meant to the women's sport if yesterday's tragedy had not happened. 713-572-4610. Let's go back to the phones. If you want to get in, we're taking your phone calls today. Mo Taylor going to join us top of the hour. Bob wants in on Payne and Pendergast. Bob, you're up. Go ahead.
Hey, yeah, just calling in also about the tragedy with Kobe and his daughter and their family. It obviously horrible. Horrible situation. I was mentioning to one of your folks that, you know, my son, and you were mentioning two current NBA players, guys in college, like my kids, and in late high school, were all acting like they were Kobe, you know, playing on the playground. I remember my son playing basketball one-on-one with me in the garage or in the driveway, taking shots, you know, saying Kobe, you know, taking the shots.
Yeah.
That was that generation. So it's true. You know, that's exactly what he meant to that generation and our generation. You know, we are saying Dr. J, you know.
Yep.
So, yep. But comparable, at least for the shock and awe of what happened, was our John Lennon. You know, we didn't ever expect something like that. It was horrible. And, you know, same thing with Kobe, but a little bit worse with his daughter. It's just horrible.
Well, you know, that's and that's a really interesting comparison because I think that speaks to something we've touched on the first couple hours, which is the emotional connection you have with somebody that, whether it be because through sports or music or what have you, it just feels like a part of it. It feels a little bit like a part of you has died.
Yeah.
Because that's very much in a way that it's different than a family member. It's different than a friend or even somebody else that you might respect. It's the emotion that a musician like John Lennon or that an athlete like Kobe Bryant, you're tied inextricably to that person through intense emotion. They have evoked emotion in you at some point. And it's a special kind of bond, and it doesn't have to be, I don't think I'm being overly sentimental in saying that. It's a physiological thing. It's that you're tied to that person because you've had such strong emotions about them, sometimes negative, when they were beating the Rockets. And it's okay. It's just, it's a part of your life. It's part of you.
Yeah. No question. It's funny he brings up John Lennon. John Lennon was shot when I was 11 years old, and I remember learning about John Lennon being shot by watching Monday Night Football. That's when it happened. It happened on a Monday night. Howard Cosell was the one who told me that John Lennon had been shot that night on Monday Night Football. And it was very strange yesterday, Seth, as the news was sort of matriculating over social media. I was at home getting ready for my Sunday night show, and I was flipping around to the various channels to see which one was going to cut in first with something to supplement the social media coverage of the story. And I happened across the Pro Bowl on ABC at the time when Joe Tessitore was sharing the news about Kobe Bryant. And that's the first thing that hit me. I had known the news already. Joe Tessitore did not break the news to me. I was just at that point surfing around to see what the reaction was to it. And Joe Tessitore, who probably of all the play-by-play announcers there, probably has the biggest degree of gravitas in his voice in situations like this, most often deployed in a football situation, not life and death. But he was sharing the news, and I was having deja vu. I'm like, this feels like 1980 again with Howard Cosell telling me about John Lennon's death.
Well, and I think
during a sporting event.
And I think somebody earlier talked about how Kobe was kind of that bridge between the old generation of basketball and the new generation. And how Kobe as a basketball player almost wouldn't be allowed to exist today because his game didn't necessarily fit the analytical mode. He was the last guy who was allowed to be the guy,
right,
to carry his team completely on his shoulders and to be perhaps at times inefficient. And it was okay because that was how basketball was. I would say the other part of that, too, is just like with John Lennon, Kobe was a part of a monoculture,
mm-hmm,
which was back before cable television was so prolific, before the internet kind of scattered our attention in multiple different directions. Back when there were only three major networks plus Fox, all those things, for the most part, America kind of followed the same news stories. The sports stories were presented in mass. And Kobe was Kobe was at the tail end of that when he came to preeminence. You know, so his first year in the league was 1996. First championship was the year 2000. And that was when we all still kind of just watched things collectively.
Yeah.
So he looms larger in our minds, perhaps, in a way that, in a weird way, even LeBron won't. Because it was just, that was that era in media. It was just, there were only so many things that we all paid attention to.
That's a really, really good point. All right, let's, Jonesy, let's drop a few headlines in here on a Monday. All right, we know the big story of the weekend is the passing of Kobe Bryant. There was basketball played yesterday. To the chagrin of some, there were a lot of folks that were, I think, hoping the NBA would have postponed the games. They did not. Basketball went on as planned yesterday with heavy hearts around the league for sure. And the Rockets were one of those games that was tipping off right about the time this news was making the rounds. The Rockets in Denver to play the Nuggets. They lost 117-110. Nobody wanted to talk about the result of this game. Afterwards, though, all that people could talk about and think about was Kobe Bryant. Here's Rockets head coach Mike D'Antoni on the passing of Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, no, it was pretty somber. It was before the game, you know, with that devastating news. It just, it shook guys a lot. You know, obviously our thoughts and prayers go out to his family and Vanessa and the kids, and just an unbelievable tragedy.
Your own thoughts of having, you know,
well,
spent
time. I mean, it's just like with everybody. He's one of the greatest players ever. An unbelievable competitor. Earned everything. Every accolade he got, he earned. And he just kept coming at you. And he's, there won't be many like him.
All right, that was Mike D'Antoni, who, of course, coached Kobe Bryant at one point in Los Angeles. Russell Westbrook, 32 points. James Harden did not play. So James Harden, I think, got kneed in the thigh on Friday against Minnesota. We're barely talking any actual sports news. Russell Westbrook, if Kobe Bryant had not passed away yesterday, one of the things we'd be talking about was Russell Westbrook carrying the Rockets to a victory in Minnesota on Friday. Instead, the sad news of Kobe dominates.
You know, one of the stories from a couple years ago that are interesting, one of the ones that came out about D'Antoni and Kobe Bryant, because, you know, D'Antoni was in L.A. at a rough time where everything was shifting and changing, and they're trying to figure out what role Kobe was going to have.
Yeah.
And that was one of the stories, was D'Antoni trying to take Kobe out of games and him refusing to do so.
Yes.
That's how, and that, again, that's why I'm so amazed that Kobe made the transition that he did, because Kobe was, he was anchored. Like, he was scratching and clawing, did not want to leave the league.
Right.
And typically with guys like that, it doesn't necessarily go well. But once he decided to make the transition, it was like, that was it. And he was off to the races in 100 different directions and thriving in all those directions. It was really amazing.
Yep. All right.
The quote was, there was no taking him out. I think even at one point I tried to talk to Mitch Kupchak about it. Mitch, he can't continue to do this. He's got to come out of games. There was no denying him from doing what he wanted to do. We tried. He told me on different occasions, Mike, I'll tell you when I'm tired and I'll tell you when I need to come out.
It's Kobe Bryant. Shifting to football, amidst the backdrop of Kobe Bryant's tragic accident yesterday, the Pro Bowl went on as planned, 2:00 kickoff yesterday afternoon. And the AFC beat the NFC 38-33 in front of 54,000 fans on Sunday at Camping World Stadium. Lamar Jackson, who I think most people thought would be getting ready for a Super Bowl when the playoffs started, they thought he'd be spending this week getting ready for the Super Bowl. Instead, he was in the Pro Bowl with several other players. He's likely going to be named the MVP of the league. He was named the most valuable offensive player of the game yesterday, a game that included a TJ Watt fumble return for a touchdown. If you're wondering, Deshaun Watson threw for 148 yards in the game. Laramie Tunsil played in the game as well. After the game, all people could talk about, again, Kobe Bryant. Here's Deshaun Watson on Kobe.
I don't even really have words for it. I mean, it was heartbreaking. It is heartbreaking. And for us to, you know, find out in the locker room before we came out, a lot of guys were just very emotional. And just to be able to, you know, get to know Kobe a couple months ago, he came down to Houston, and now with his loss and his family, prayers all out to his family and friends. And it's terrible news.
That is Deshaun Watson on the passing of Kobe Bryant. I saw Drew Brees interview as well. It was, yeah. That had to be a weird feeling for those football players, having the Kobe story hovering over the football game.
Well, and this is one thing, too, and, you know, having the golf tournament yesterday, kind of people discovering it as it went on. Was it the news came while the game was being played? Or
the
was
Pro Bowl?
Yeah.
Right about the time it kicked right off.
Now, and I guess this isn't directly related, but it kind of isn't in a way. Russell Wilson was supposed to start the game. He let Drew Brees start the game in front of him, almost as a tip of the cap, a show of respect to Drew Brees. Mm. Drew Brees might be retiring. He said he wants to take about a month to think about it. But I think in a lot of ways, probably Russell Wilson's respect for Drew Brees is the same way a lot of young guys in the NBA right now feel about Kobe Bryant.
Yeah.
It's just a different... They were lucky enough to play with an icon and play against an icon at times.
Yep, absolutely. So the AFC beats the NFC 38-33, in case you had money on the over. Very quickly here in football, we don't need to go the full 90 here, Jonesy, on this one. The Kansas City Chiefs arrived in Miami for the Super Bowl. There is going to be a Super Bowl played this coming Sunday, and we'll be talking about it, obviously, throughout the week here on Sports Radio 610. Seth, I don't know if you saw this, injecting a little bit of levity into what was an otherwise pretty somber day yesterday for sports fans. The Kansas City Chiefs arrived with some of the players dressed in the trademark Andy Reid Hawaiian shirt. Reid was dressed in business attire. His players arrived dressed as Andy Reid. None of them stuffed a pillow up underneath their shirt to go with the full costume.
Yeah, they actually did do it as a show of respect.
They did, yeah. So the Chiefs have arrived in Miami, and we're off and running on Super Bowl week.
I didn't read Peter King's Football Morning in America this morning completely. I read the first paragraph, which is Andy Reid picking Peter King up at 3 a.m. at his hotel, because that's when Andy Reid apparently wakes up.
Really?
Yeah.
Boy, that's hard for a heavy guy like that to wake up at 3 a.m. every day.
Reid is, I think he's one of these guys that just kind of plugs along.
Okay.
I don't think he's ever super intense. He just keeps rolling along.
He's a grinder.
Supposedly he'd gone to bed at, 11 p.m. and up at 3 a.m.
Good for him, man.
He's not a spring chicken anymore
either.
He's got
to work a nap in at some point. Yeah. Last one here in headlines. While competing in the Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines on Sunday, a shaken and subdued Tiger Woods was unaware about the death of Kobe Bryant. The news of Bryant's reported death broke while Woods was playing the front nine. His caddy, Joe LaCava, who we've actually had on, I don't know if we've had him on Payne and Pendergast, but I know we had Joe on the Triple Threat back in the day, learned of the accident but decided not to tell his boss, waiting until he walked off the green to share the news. Bryant and his daughter Gianna, of course, were on that helicopter, as we've talked about throughout the morning. A stunned Woods went to the scoring area to sign his card and then spoke briefly with officials, signed a few autographs, and then gave some words to the folks about his thoughts on the passing of Kobe Bryant.
You know, Amanda, I didn't know until Joey just told me coming off 18 green. I didn't really understand why the people in the gallery were saying doing it for Mamba. But now I understand. It's a shocker to everyone. Unbelievably sad, and one of the more tragic days that I think, well, for me, it's just, the rally is kind of sitting in because I was just told probably about 5 minutes ago.
Tiger Woods, Seth, how weird would that have been? If you're Kobe, people are yelling, do it for Mamba. And he didn't know. He's at this golf tournament at Torrey Pines. Joe LaCava, his caddy, knew the news but didn't want to share it with Tiger because he didn't want to defocus him during his round. And yet you have people in the gallery at the golf tournament yelling at Tiger, do it for Mamba, and he's got no clue what they're yelling about.
Yeah, I think what a weird environment. And Barkley said he was in a movie and came out and learned the news, and to which I would say to both those guys, Tiger Woods and Charles Barkley, good job not using your cell phones every waking damn moment.
Well, Tiger's in the middle of a round of golf.
I kind of feel like maybe the 22-year-old golfers are checking their cell phones between each hole. They're probably not allowed. I don't know. I feel like they're tweeting or they're putting together a TikTok or something while they do it.
Yeah. So that was a reaction to Tiger Woods. We'll continue to mix in reaction from around the sports world to the passing of Kobe Bryant. We're going to talk to Mo Taylor here in just a few minutes on the show. Get his thoughts on it. 713-572-4610. 713-572-4610. I was thinking, Seth, about LeBron and Kobe. Of course, LeBron passed Kobe on the all-time scoring list on Saturday night. Kobe's very last tweet that he sent out on Saturday night was congratulations to LeBron. He tweeted that, gotta find the tweet here, but he basically tweeted that the game, here it is, continuing to move the game forward at King James. Much respect, my brother, with the flexing arm, hashtag 33644, which was Kobe's point total that James needed to surpass. That tweet has been liked 2 million times and has been retweeted 462,000 times and has over 56,000 replies. And I think merely replying to that tweet, I think, is indicative of the state of mind that this type of thing puts people into, Seth, where you don't know what to do. If you're a Kobe fan, you just, I would imagine, if you're a Kobe fan, you don't know what to do. You do something as seemingly kind of fruitless as replying to a tweet that the person who you're replying to is never going to see.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because it makes you know. And I guess it's the same sentiment as putting flowers somewhere or putting. Yeah. You know, it's you just want to express something towards the guy. It's the same reason why people go stand in front of the Staples Center, just because you want to go stand somewhere where you get that Pavlovian Kobe feeling if you're a Kobe fan.
You know, and it was nice driving home from the airport last night, seeing the bridges over 59 through Montrose lit up in purple and gold.
Yeah, Mayor
Turner.
That
was a really nice touch. I'd seen some mention of it, and I'd kind of forgotten about it until I was driving through there, and it kind of hits you. It's just like another one of those little moments where it all just kind of hits you.
Yeah.
Also, I want to say something. You know what? No, this is all right. I'm not getting hot takey.
Yeah,
like I was talking about Kobe and how Kobe was kind of a bastion of that bygone era where, all right, people weren't going to demand a certain level of efficiency from because everything's gotten so damn analytical. Somehow that turned it into me saying that James Harden was better than Kobe Bryant somehow.
when you specifically said that I'm not comparing the two.
Yeah, and it's okay. Like, it's okay that he was in it. But that was my whole point, was that it was okay that Kobe would have these games where he shot 30% and people were kind of like, yeah, but he kept driving and they won the game,
Kobe shot 6 for 24
right.
in an NBA Finals game where they clinched a title and he won the MVP.
Right.
That so was like, Kobe.
So when we talk about the eras spanning the generations, people would be a lot more critical of his efficiency these days. And you know what would have been different? Kobe would have changed his game. Like, if Kobe had come up in this modern time, he would have ended up having a more efficient game, you know? Like,
maybe he would have. Mike D'Antoni might beg to differ.
Well, but by the time D'Antoni had him, that was Kobe.
Yeah, you're saying
Kobe.
If he came up in the game, right.
Yeah,
If he were a late teen or early 20s in the analytical years, he would have embraced it like the rest of the
league. It's kind
of
like Kevin Durant, you know? Kevin Durant has numbers fed to him all the time in a way just because that was him coming up in that era. He's not far behind Kobe, but it was just a different age and a different era.
Yeah.
No, I'm saying celebrate that.
Yeah.
Like, celebrate the fact that Kobe did it in a way that likely won't be allowed again. And right. It's not like he was an inefficient player. He's 25th all-time in efficiency. Right. But you look at guys like, you know, Jordan, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Shaq, and David Robinson. Those are the top five.
Yeah, there's a different style of play coached into players today,
yeah.
I think what your point is, and I think it's a valid one.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.